Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
Is for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We hail. There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughed up a lung. They're looking around. The Jumbotron shows and pans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And at that particular time, I lost it. Devon dropped.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
This one mic.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yesterday, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
All right, welcome to One Mic here on the RSG platform. This is your guy, D. Wills, in the building, getting you into the show. As always, I want to make sure that you all get over to realsportsguys.com. You can listen to all our most recent podcasts and go back into the catalog a little bit. All you have to do is click on the podcast tab and you will be able to hear all of our shows. We are trying to upgrade. That's for us, Real Sports Guys Central. So make sure you get over to realsportsguys.com. But if you're a podcaster, you can get us on Apple or all other podcast platforms as well. Or you can always come to Blog Talk Radio website to look for us as well. So we appreciate you. If you have a chance to rate us, please give us a 5, share some comments. We appreciate that for supporting us here on the underground. You know, we for the past couple of weeks, we've been doing a preview of each of the divisions for the NFL, but Hank is not here this week, so we're going to take a little hiatus away from that, come back to it next week. We will be looking at the AFC North as well as the AFC South next week, doing a preview with that. We'll have a little bit of football because it's football fever. That's the name of this podcast today, and we'll get into that and decipher in about 10 to 15 minutes. But I got to bring my co-host tonight onto the air with me so that we can let y'all know who's in the building. But we're gonna start with a special guest, the person who's gonna be sitting in the seat for our man Hank. We know him as Carl Hampton, but we also on this show officially call him the Hammer. He brings it from Chicago. Don't just say Chicago, from Southside. My man Carl Hampton, how you doing?
I'm great, D. Wills. How you doing, brother?
Man, welcome, man. It's good to have you here on the show. It's always good to have you bless us and on the mic and bless our the underground and the RSG family. So we always good. We look fun to look good. We look forward to having a good time with you tonight. And then, you know, we got the youngin'. You know, he's growing. You know, he's all over the sports world, but he's killing that boxing thing. You know, he's doing it all. My man Darnell Kirkland. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. 2 days is in full swing. We got pads on. We're starting to get all the plays down. Got a few injuries going on right now, but that's typical for you know, first time you put on the pads. Everybody got a little finger. But it's been fun, man. We're just taking it one day at a time. But this is great to be back out there.
Oh, so you got the youngins going. You got the youngins going. You know, y'all gonna try and make some noise this year.
You know it.
All right.
As our start left tackle said, we gonna have 7 all state. He said we gonna have 7 all state offensive linemen. He said we gonna have 2 all state linemen on the bench.
All right. There you go. Y'all already talking before we would get there. I can appreciate that. Well, we got a good show tonight. We are going to be killing. If you're a first-time listener, we have kind of 3 main segments to One Mic. We have an open mic session where we're, you know, we kind of are just trying to get warmed up. We throw some topics up in there. And then we get into the cipher, which is our main part of our podcast, which you'll get in about 10 to 15 minutes, which is usually the title of the show. We're going to be talking about football, both college and some NFL topics. And then we will drop the mic. We usually have the elder statesman, Hank, usually drops the mic. But, you know, when we have a guest here, we always like to have our guest be the one to drop the mic to close the show out. And so that's, we hope that Hammer will be that person to close it out for us tonight. But in this open mic, we're going to call this open mic Hammer Time. You know, for you Oaktown 357 folks over there, we're going to call it Hammer Time. Because we, you know, when you get the hammer on, you know, we got to catch up. Me and Ham, we go way back. And so I'm always, and I really respect his opinion. And there's times when we'll be debating and arguing, but I love to get his perspective on things because he'll come with it, you know. And contrary to popular belief from Hammer and I would tell folks always talking about, well, folks in the Midwest are passive. And I'm like, y'all, I don't know where y'all go to talk about people being quiet. Hammer's from the South Side. He say what he mean. He mean what he say. So he his chest. And if you ain't been in those spaces where we grew up, I don't know where y'all get to some of this stuff about the Midwest, because that's not how it goes. You'll find that out with my man Hammer. So we got some topics that I want to throw at the Hammer, just kind of get going and get him back in the flow a little bit. And Darnell and I'll follow up or respond to, you know, whatever he said. You know, we're going to try and hit him with some things in the news. So Hammer, I want to start out with what you thought and what you were thinking about when the NCAA came out with their new rules in terms of what they want to do with college basketball that was, branded by LeBron James and his, whatever, 89,000 million followers as the Rich Paul rule. And then they came back and they rescinded it. But as you were watching that unfold, what were you thinking about? Yeah, I just want to get your initial thoughts of what you thought about when all that was happening.
Well, the bottom line with the Rich Paul rule is that they're very upset that a young African-American man like Rich Paul, who doesn't come from the clique, can have such power that he has. The young men he's getting as student-athletes who eventually become NBA players. The fact that this guy is able to basically change the NBA and get AD traded to the Lakers because of his move. Draymond Green is with him. So this guy is a brand. They don't want another Rich Paul out there. So this is a way to stop that. But you look at what happened with LeBron's brand and just people calling it out, people having the freedom of expression, they said no to this. And it was vitriolic as far as the reaction to it. People call it straight up racist. And you look at people like Jalen Rose calling it out and everyone from the sports spectrum calling it out and seeing this as a way to deny opportunity to young African-American men who are playing the game in a different way. They're not playing the David Falk way. They're not playing it the Lee Steinberg way. They're playing it the Rich Paul way in the streets. And so they resented that. But it was great to see the pressure from our community organize, and there was no dissension on this issue, and the NBA snapped back and got some sense and rescinded the rule immediately, and that's a great thing for all sports world.
I think you hit on a really good point. I mean, the ability for these guys to organize and respond, and I mean, last week we talked about this on the show between LeBron, Chris Paul, Kevin Hart, you know, you're talking about, what was it, 108 million people or something crazy number, or, you know, that they tapped just on Twitter, right? Like, it was a crazy number. And their ability to mobilize and get a message out is just such the equalizer in a way that's fascinating. And when the NCAA, all they had to do is do what they just did at the end. I mean, the NBA is already certifying people. So they already got a mechanism for doing that. And then they just add this unnecessary layer on top of it as if education is important. You know, when you got people like Zuckerberg, who I don't believe even, you know, he didn't complete his degree. He went on
he dropped out.
And launched a corporate company. And so, so many examples.
Bill Gates dropped out. Yeah.
Bill Gates dropped out. You know, you have all these examples, and you don't see him as a Bill Gates. You see him as somebody hustling in the street rather than someone like Zuckerberg or Bill Gates trying to build a multi-billion dollar business. So that's, I love your perspective on that. And, you know, we're going to stay tuned and watch, but I love the way they were able, you know, to mobilize and get the NCAA like to get away from the things they like to do sometimes, over-regulate, when all they need, they came in with the sword and all they needed was the pen. All right, so you talked a little bit about Draymond when you were talking about it. Draymond came out and, you know, with all this talk about, you know, basically folks saying that, you know, Golden State, at least in this year, is not going to really make any noise. You know, basically you have to wait until Clay fully heals. And Draymond basically said, you know, he relishes about this. This is like before they really came on, they were the underdogs. Before, you know, they were these perennial favorites. And he relished going back to those roles and looking to, you know, really from that position make some moves. Do you think that Golden State has the ability with the acquisitions they made here in the offseason and, you know, they'll get Clay back probably later in the year. He won't be the Clay that we know. But do you think they have the ability to make a run? Most people predict them probably going out in the first round, maybe second round. Could you see them make it to the finals next year?
Yeah, it depends on the defense. I'd say definitely Draymond is going to be hungry. KD's gone. Andre Iguodala's gone. And so he's going to be able to be more of an impactful offensive and defensive player. And the fact that he took care of himself and lost that weight near the end of the season, he realizes in the new contract, too, there was inked by Rich Paul. I think definitely GSW can make a run. It depends on how Russell acclimates himself from the system or if they trade Russell. I don't sleep on Kevon Looney gave him a discount, and that was a great move for them, as well as Willie Cauley-Stein there as well. It's really going to help the interior because, you know, Boogie was gone most of last year, and sadly he'll be gone all of this year coming up. So, yeah, I think, again, that GSW can make a run. The chemistry has to come together, but the one thing that the crew is going to see, this is the original crew. You know, KD came along for the ride, and, you know, it was an arranged marriage, basically. And it worked out great. Two titles and 3 years. But now this is the original cats that came together. Draymond in the second round. Steph Curry, you know, guys do, but, again, they were talking about his ankles, and he didn't go as high as he should go, considering his production. And then also D'Angelo Russell has a chip on his shoulder. Dogged out at L.A., embarrassed with the Nick Young situation, and went to Brooklyn and balled, and then came back to GSW. And I think that they could really have a nice set, three-guard set with him, Curry, and when Clay comes back with Draymond and with Cauley-Stein or Looney, and they're going to ball. And so, yeah, don't count them out. Obviously, my money's on the Clippers right now coming out the West, but experience counts. And so watch out for GSW and that great coaching staff.
You listen to one mic here. Tonight we're going to be, in probably about 10, 15 minutes, really getting into the football. It's football fever right now, but we're in an open mic, and we met our man, you know, Kyle. We call him the Hammer Time Hampton. This is Hammer Time that we have it with him. We are, you know, going over some things that have happened in the sports news. You know, crazy thing about it, I'm going to do a little follow-up on that one. And it's kind of tying the first two together. So Draymond signs the extension, which I think was a smart move by him, given where he's at in his career, given, you know, just to, like, secure. And then folks get on Rich Paul for having them sign for what people believe to be less money. I'm like, the cat can't win. People get mad because he's driving up the salary. They think he got collusion going on. And then when he makes a deal that I think was the right deal, given Draymond, and especially if he wants to stay in Golden State, you know, if he didn't want to go to a season, he wants to stabilize. I thought it was a great extension, but I'm like, man, Rich Paul, like he gets the deal that his guy wants, he closes it, and then people still come back criticizing Draymond for taking less money. When I think it's probably the right move. He's not a guy that looks like he wants to move. He wants to stay there with those original guys. And the other thing I think is really interesting about that is this is where you're going to see Steph as the mentor, right? And kind of seeing, you know, what he can do with Russell. And I think that could be dangerous with Steph as a mentor for him, because the one thing people never really said about Russell is that he couldn't play. I mean, he can play. They always worried about his maturity, you know, stay out at the airport, quit trying to smuggle stuff in. You this is not, I mean, it's South, you know, but if he can get with somebody like Steph and mentor and stay focused on the court, this is a guy that can play and can put up big numbers. This is a guy that can hit 40 on you in the night. And so he got firepower, and you get him with someone like Steph who can get him to continue to play loose and Blitzman. That could be interesting, because I think people might be underplaying. I think people are feeling like Golden State treat him as a pass-through, but I think Golden State might see something that, you know, many of us saw. If you get this young man in the right situation, he's got skills. And so you're looking for people with that kind of firepower. So that's going to be interesting to kind of see where that goes moving forward. But like you said, I think, you know, the Clippers, the Lakers, you know, are really the ones out west, you know, controlling the agenda. Even with Boogie going down, you know, Boogie would be a nice piece for the Lakers to add a little more to it. But I think even with what they got, you know, I think they're going to be a team that you're going to need to reckon with. Shoes, man. Money. It's got to be the shoes. Somebody paid $200,000 for Zion shoes. Not the shoe he blew out, but the shoe I saw him play in when I was at the Maui Invitational. Not against Gonzaga, but against San Diego State University. I don't know what was so special about that shoe. He played against some good teams at that tournament. And San Diego State got a lot of respect for them. There's folks out there. You know, that's Kawhi's old squad, old stomping ground. But if you don't get some shoes from the game he played out in Maui, get the one he played when he's going head up against Rui. Don't get the game, the one he got where I don't understand it, man. So $200,000, Hampton. Would you pay $200,000 if you had it for some shoes like that? Is that a veteran?
Yeah, our rich, yeah. I mean, the rich get richer. The perspective, really, D. Wills, is how much money you have. I was talking, like, somebody broke it down about at a place I was at, a Rotary dinner tonight, and they were talking about Iger, the guy who's you know, the chairman of Disney, made $33 million 1 year, got a raise to $66 million. So it depends on what, again, your means. Average person would look at it, that's crazy, but again, money is what you make of it. And so if that's the value of Zion's shoes, and those shoes could probably be worth maybe $1 million or $2 million down the road, considering if he projects the way he does as far as being an iconic player that people think he will be, it's a great investment. But I can't hate on someone with the money to invest in what they want to do. So, yeah, so it's another crazy thing.
You don't get the San Diego State shoe. I know you. If you're going to the mall, you're going to get the shoe at least playing against the Zag, or you're going to get the shoe he blew out. If you had the money, you're not going to get the shoe against the first shoe he played. Get the shoe that he played against anybody. But you're going to get the San Diego State shoe?
It might have not been available, G-Wells, but all I know is that's the shoe, and maybe 10 years down the road, if Zion's as great as people think he's going to be, that shoe's going to be worth a lot of money. So, yeah, it's an investment.
Wow. Okay, man. I didn't expect that. I thought you were gonna come south side on. He got to be crazy. But look, you get soft in your old age, bro. You coming?
No,
out
I think it's soft my old. I mean, if you had somebody who only had $200,000 in the bank and they paid for the shoes, then that's a fool. Then we would call him out on the south side of Chicago. But obviously, in my understanding, this person's got great means, and so no, I'm not gonna hate.
About LeBron. They say LeBron, you can't get LeBron to pay for anything. LeBron only have premium Pandora. He got the commercials. He learned from somebody. I would, that'd be interesting. Well, I'm surprised. I'm flabbergasted. But I'm easy. You are, every time you come to show, man, you expand my thinking. I'm with you on this one. So you know I'm happy, man. Back here in the Big Blue, Michigan. You know, Juwan Howard's up there. And he's out of the preseason. The way he builds community, he out there, the coaches, they out there working out with the players. They making it happen. He's in the trenches with them in the gym. Got video up there working out with the players. Hammer. What other coach would you give money, or you, what did you want to do, see work out with his players, to see if he get to a workout with his players? What other coach would you like to see work out with his players in preseason?
I'd say Coach K. He's older. Yeah. We got young bucks around. So, yeah, I want to see if he can keep up with them. So, that's off his question in prep. So, yeah, so definitely, I think Coach K. Definitely, he's changed his model. He's gone with the one and done now. And so, especially, he's getting near 70. Yeah, I want to see Coach K run with him. Obviously, Juwan, phenomenal. He's back at with Blue and back, but and he's just removed, you know, a few years from playing. But yeah, Coach K, you know, played his ball at West Point and did well. But let's see Coach K run up and down with these young bucks. These Brian here, the Jalen Johnson's coming to the world, and yeah, let's do that. So Coach K is a coach that I'd be fascinated with because of his age, because of his new style, because, you know, the Duke brand. And so you saw that this year with R.J. Barrett and Zion and even Cam Reddish, just the brand and these one and duns he brought in and how he was able to build a squad just like Coach Calipari did back in the day. So, yeah, that's what I definitely Coach K.
Yeah, I'd love to see I might see Cal, man, because Cal might fall out.
I think Cal can run up and down with him. I think Coach K, because Coach K, man, you know, 70 years old,
think,
Reynolds.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it'd be really interesting, man. He'll be huffing and puffing, and yeah, so.
The players be laughing at him, but Juwan was out there working out looking like, man, I'm like, you still can play a little bit, Jay. Go and do what you got to do.
Juwan's in great shape, man. He looks great. I mean, for some teams in the NBA, sadly, for the Bulls, he probably could sign up. He could probably load up with us. Yeah, we're so trash, so.
Oh, my goodness. We get to NBA talk, man. We gonna have some words about them Bulls. We'll get you back on the show for it. Well, you was,
get rid of guard packs, man. Terrible.
That's right. I know. You listen to One Mic here on RSG platform. Again, go to realsportsguys.com for all things RSG. Click on the podcast tab, and you can listen to our most recent podcast, and you go way back in the catalog. We got some good stuff, and we got some good ones when Hammer was on there when he was just out of control. So we got some good stuff. We got my man Kyle Hampton, the Hammer, on the show with us. My man Darnell. Hank is out of the box. If you are listening, coming on and try to catch up with, in terms of our NFL preview segments we've been doing, we'll be back at that next week. We'll be looking at the AFC North, my Pittsburgh Steelers, and then we'll be looking at the AFC South next week. We're about to go into the cipher. You know, as we say, if you're first-time listeners, you know, we do the open mic just to get warmed up. We want to do the Hammer Time with my guy, you know, coming back to kind of, you know, just get him going. You know, we want to get him a couple looks. We want to set a couple screens. We want to get him lathered up a little bit so that he can get with us as we go into to the cipher.
Call the cipher.
All right, the cipher this week is going to be on football fever. You know, we're going to be talking, as football is coming up, people getting lathered up. You heard Darnell talking. You know, he's high school coach. You know, they got two-a-days going. You got college football going, people starting to get in there and get lathered up. You got hard knocks going. This is where football is trying to recapture all the attention. And so we want to spend a little time looking at football, you know, across the landscape of both college and pro football. And it's a number of things that have been coming up with college football. So there was an interesting thing that ESPN just did, and I wanted to really hit the fellas with this. They listed their top 50 programs of all time over the 150-year history of college football. And it was just interesting to kind of look at the teams that they had listed on their list. They start out number one for them is Alabama. I think it's pretty obvious with Alabama, particularly with the recent years. They've won 5 out of the last 10 national championships. Number 2 was Notre Dame. Number 3 was Ohio State. 4, Oklahoma. 5, USC. 6, Michigan. 7, Yale. 8, Nebraska. 9, Texas. And then, move down here, and then 10 North Dakota State, 15 national titles. And so they're looking across all divisions. They even have, a couple powerhouse Division III programs that I've had recognized. So in some ways, it's interesting because, way back in the day, before some of these programs became Division III programs, they're all in one division. Some of these programs decided to become Division III programs. The institution I was at, Beloit, was a powerhouse basketball team. They used to whoop up a lot of teams in the early 50s and had some, some scandals that pushed them in to Division III space. But, so a number of programs, University of Chicago, numbers, so that you'll see some of that. But that was the top 10 here. Did you guys get a chance to look at the list?
Yes.
Before we go out, we're all going to do our own top 10.
I can go from 10 to 1, too.
University of Wisconsin Whitewater at 31. What's going on?
Yeah.
Going out there, Whitewater, Mount Union. Who was surprised for you in the top 10? Or who was outside the top 10 that you thought should have been in the top 10?
Definitely the U. The U is iconic. I mean, look at all the players they've created in the NFL. So I think that's crazy. But I think obviously they were hating on the scandal they've had. But the U is a U, man. I mean, it's called a U for a reason. So enough said.
Transcending. Darnell, was there a team that was out that you thought was lower than you anticipated?
I'm going with that. The U.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're probably pretty consistent about that. I got a feeling when we do our top tens, they will be in the top 10. What I do appreciate for the list is that they look at 150 years and they looked across multiple divisions. And if you know about some of these, when I saw Mount Union, that's a great program. Wittenberg, so you start looking at some of these small Division III programs that have been Whitewater. Some of these places have been dominant. It's interesting that they've kind of look at it across that. So that's something that I did appreciate about the list and kind of contextualizing things and in terms of what those programs have meant in overall in terms of college football landscape. So I did appreciate about the list. Well, let me go why don't we go Hammer, since you the guest, you back, you family, but you coming back in. Why don't we let you go with your top 10? Who'd you have in your top 10?
Number 10, Florida State Seminoles. Bobby Bowden put them on the map. And obviously now with Brother Taggart, they better get it together this year or he's going to be home. But definitely did number 10. Number 9, the U. Jimmy Johnson, Snellenberg, Butch Davis. I don't say I don't care about the scandal. The scandal is what it is. I mean, it's sadly it's NCAA. Number 8, Texas Longhorns. Darryl Royal, Mack Brown, great tradition. Earl Campbell, Vince Young. Number 7, Nebraska. Had the old wishbone, Coach Osborne. People like Tommy Frazier, Turner Gill. People grew up on Rozier, Dave Remington, made Lyman sexy as far as players. Number 6, Oklahoma, from Marcus Dupree to Barry Switzer and Bob Stoops. Number 5, you don't hate on me for this, but go blue, Michigan. Definitely, Bo made it a great era, and Harbaugh, He's on the clock right now, so he's on the clock. Number 4, definitely USC, with Ralston, Robinson, Pete Carroll, transcendent as far as the decades. Number 3, again, despite the scandal, Ohio State University, Urban Meyer, Earl Bruce. So that's number and then number 2, Roll Tide. And number 1 will be very controversial, but, I mean, if you think about the most iconic program, it's only one program, and it's Notre Dame. No question. I mean, they are college football. I don't care what anybody else says. Bama is getting there, but still Notre Dame is the brand in college football. And people care about Notre Dame every year. If they're raggedy, if they're not raggedy. If they're, you know, in the BCS or they're in the toilet bowl, people care about Notre Dame. And so that's my top 10. Not dissing any of the schools. Great to see the Mountain Unions, Whitewaters, Wisconsin, and Stanford. Both my alumni are on the list, which is great. But definitely those are my top 10.
All right, that's a good list. We'll discuss some of those as we. Once we get all of our on the table. All right, Youngin, who you have?
All right, so it's a little different. I got at 10, I have Florida State. And 9, wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh, I only have. I'm sorry, at 10, I have Penn State. Sorry about that. Number 9, I have Florida State. At number 8, I have Oklahoma. At number 7, I have Miami. At number 6, I have Michigan. Number 5, I have Texas. Number 4, I have Ohio State. 3 is Notre Dame. 2 is Alabama, and number 1 is USC. I know it's kind of it might be kind of controversial. It's something I won't say controversial, but it's going to be something that a lot of people are not going to agree with. But you go through the history of college football, you go through the O.J. Simpson, the Marcus Allen, the in the Reggie Bush days, there's a lot of NFL players that have come through USC, and a lot of good different eras in USC history. So USC is my number one team.
Yeah, I believe USC has like 500 NFL players that have been picked by NFL. I think that's the most by any university. So I mean it's. You know, you can make an argument that USC is the greatest program, and so I think both of you make some really interesting arguments. Mine's gonna be a little bit different, and I'm gonna give a little bit of homage across 150 years. Starting at number 10, I do think Yale is number 10, and sometimes people get caught up with, you know, just the modern era versus going way back, but Yale was the most dominant program for like the first 50 years. Of college football. And in that recognition, you know, it's, I think it puts itself into place in a way. I think Hammer talked about Notre Dame, because you can talk about Notre Dame dominance across all those eras. I mean, Notre Dame being that iconic brand. And I think Yale was that early on. Number 9, I had Florida State. Florida State was ranked in the top 4, I believe, in the AP poll for 14 straight years from 1987 to 2000. I mean, for most of our lives growing up watching football, Florida State was the team. You know, Florida State was a dominant presence. Bobby Bowden had a lot to do with it. You know, and then Jimbo Fisher kind of continued a little bit. And as Hammer said, you know, they got to turn some things around, or there's going to be a vacancy sign there. But Florida State, when you talk about a brand, and dominant brand, you know, they're a top 10 program. Nebraska, you know, Nebraska is only trailing Michigan, Ohio State, and Texas in terms of all-time victories for FBS teams. And, you know, they were, you know, for a long time synonymous, and, you know, they with college football, particularly under Dr. Tom Osborne. When you think about it, they had that system of guys being there for 5 years. I mean, they were rolling and a very dominant program. And then the U, you know, and I would put the U even higher. But in some ways, the U was kind of like, to me, the U was kind of like you appreciate this, Hammer, the Gale Sayers of college football teams, right?
Okay.
Time was short, but dominant.
Okay.
Right?
Great analogy, brother. Great analogy.
You know, and it was so electric that you just can't ignore it. And for it not to be in the top 10, no matter what you say, you got to be crazy. And when people make films of you, when you look at the number of Hall of Famers that keep coming through the door that they have, the number of I think they hold the record for the most first-round selections in a single draft. You know, the most consecutive drafts with at least a first-round draft selection. You know, so when you're talking about producing at a high level, you know, I think they get a bad rap. They're kind of like college football version of the Fab Five in a sense that they pushed against kind of with the cultural norms in a way that made people uncomfortable. I had Michigan at 6 with the, you know, most all-time wins, 42 titles since the beginning of the AP poll. They got 11 national championships. You know, they've got to start putting it together here in these years. And I think, you know, Harbaugh could put some things together. It could be interesting where Michigan goes if he can realize the potential that we think he has as a coach. But, you know, they're sitting at 6 right now. I have at 5, Oklahoma. Oklahoma has 7 Heisman winners, including 2 back-to-back in these most recent Heisman winners. They have 7 national championships, 48 conference championships. They have 162 first-team All-Americans. 82 of those are consensus. You know, they have been a dominant program. They had the longest winning streak of Division I history of 47 straight games. They are the only program with 4 coaches with 100-plus wins. So, you know, that right there talks about excellence over a long period of time. Then at 4, that team down south, the Buckeyes in Columbus. But I just got to recognize game. I got to recognize game. You know, they have 10 undefeated seasons, 10 perfect seasons. They have 8 national championships. The Buckeyes have been a steady program for a long period of time. You know, the 10-year war with Michigan, it's one of those brands when you think about college football, they immediately come up and they're in the conversation. They won, the first bowl championship as well. And then number 3, I have as USC, and I was debating like y'all USC being higher. You know, one of the things I said about Alabama's dominance and SEC dominance, you can link their dominance to the fall of USC. If USC had USC, I used to call them the SEC killer. If you looked at Pete Carroll and how he played against USC, he used to stump SEC teams. I mean, the 2 teams that people don't want to reclaim their space is Miami and USC, because all they got to do is look out the window. Hey, get on that bike and ride over here to that field. We want to give you a scholarship. Like, they have talent sitting outside their window. And when those 2 teams, they're humming, they can be the most dominant programs in the country. And then I think, as you said, youngster, the marquee talent they've had that, you know, is synonymous not only with college football, but with professional football. You know, from, you know, O.J. to Marcus Allen to, you know, you start thinking about the number of players they've had. Ricky Bell. You start thinking about Junior Seau. You just keep going down.
Palomalu.
You start going down just these marquee names. Well, they're hot. They're hot. Snoop Dogg's crip walking. Everything's good in L.A. when they're going. And then this team, I hate to put them here, just like Ohio State, because when you play football or grew up in the Midwest, all your coaches love Notre Dame. You just make you sick. You can practice talking about them, go home. And for most of the youngsters until recent years, in their lifetime, they haven't seen Notre Dame be relevant. But if you look at over the history of college football, as Hammer said, it's the brand. It's the brand. People want to talk about them. They want to argue about them. And in some ways, it benefited because it was the only game people could watch. When TV came on, that was the one they watched. You know, it was one of those teams that was on, that was visible. You got the Rockne speeches and all this stuff. So, you know, you got Notre Dame at 2. And then number 1.
The Gipper.
And the Gipper. What you got right here for me, the number 1 is Alabama. And the reason why I say Alabama is when you're ranking probably the top 5 coaches of all time, you might end up putting 2 Alabama coaches in the top 5. You talk about Bear Bryant, and you talk about Nick Saban. they in the modern era, if you think about it, over the past 10 years, they've won half championships. Let that sink in. Over the past, they can lay claim to 17 national championships across the different polls if they want to. You know, this is they have 34 seasons with 10 wins or more. So, you know, this is a standard program, and I think it's pretty close. I think Hammer has some really good reasons why Notre Dame could be up in front. But when you're just talking about the level of dominance, in particularly in the recent years, I think that's what tips them over the top for me. So just some observations. I was, you know, it's interesting the way, like, USC and Notre Dame are interesting teams. Let's unpack them a little bit. Darnell, talk a little bit about, because you had USC as your top team. Talk a little bit more about, like, why you would put USC over Alabama, given the history of Alabama and the recent years of Alabama and Notre Dame.
Well, to be honest with you, I was really thinking about putting Alabama as the number one team, but I had to look at myself and think, because I'm a young guy, so pretty much for most of the time I've been watching college football in the last 10 years, well, everybody, the last 10 years, Alabama has been the most dominant team, and they've had a run that's pretty much like any other that I've seen. But I didn't really want to be that guy that's like a prisoner of the moment, you know what I'm saying? I didn't want to I didn't know if I was using recency bias, pretty much. But now I look at the list, and they have 15 national championships, and I guess Alabama probably should be the number one team. But that's pretty much why I picked USC, because with USC, I was thinking of the different eras that they were dominant in, like the 70s, when I was growing up, you know what I'm saying? They had, like, different like time periods of being great, but and when I look at Alabama, I think of mostly just the current run, because I don't know too much about the Bear Bryant days and like the players that they had, but I know more about USC.
And I think part of what makes Notre Dame and USC work, if you think historically, Bama was I think part of what hurt Bama outside the South were just the issues around civil rights. And even when you talk about Bear Bryant and his late acceptance, he was after he took that whooping from USC, that even recruiting black players. So I think they have a history that makes it difficult for people to embrace them in the same way they embrace Notre Dame and USC. You see what I'm saying? And I think over time, they weren't able to have that kind of branding nationally because of that. The bias that many, if you talk to people in the South, you know, other regions of the country had against Southern teams because of that history. So I think that's what hurts Alabama when people take up. Notre Dame was the brand because Notre Dame, in some ways, didn't have to battle some of these social issues in the same way. Same thing with USC. USC was the West Coast, and California seemed to be much more progressive, right? And so I think, even when you look at OJ's story and where he ended up and the things he was able to do, and then you look at Bear Bryant, it was like he was late to the party, right? He had to take a whooping, you know, to come to the party. So I think that part of that is what erodes, you know, if you just don't go with the numbers, part of that is what I think makes a struggle for people, you know, when they look at Alabama historically. Amber, you had Notre Dame as number one, and I think you made a pretty good case around that. But could you make a case for USC, or could you make a case for Alabama? Are you pretty strong with that Notre Dame?
You can make a case for Alabama because of the fact that, like you said, Bear Bryant, iconic, as well as Nick Saban. But I just think that if you look at just a pure brand of Notre Dame just from the beginnings of modern college football to now, just the staying power of the brand is why I would say it's number one. You look at USC too, yeah, definitely in the 60s, 70s, great coaches from and great players, but again, you're talking, if you're not talking about the early parts of the game, New Rockne, just the icons of the game,
yeah.
You have to say Notre Dame is a top team.
Well, hey, we're going to keep a list to look at this. Thanks, y'all, for going. Like, this was an interesting list. I'm going to go back and take a look at some of the other teams going down. I thought this would be a good thing for us to get into. We'll cover a couple more topics here while we're talking about Bama. You know, Bama took a beat down last year, you know, against Clemson. There's no other way to say it. You know, it wasn't like they got finessed and just, you know, out-finessed. Right. You know, there are times where early on when they played, when they played Deshaun Watson, Deshaun was just quicker. He was throwing downfield. It felt like Clemson beat him up last year. And so now you hear about Bama coming back, put a little bit more in the running game, trying to figure out how to, not really protect Tua a little bit more. You know, they're perennial favorites. But do you think Bama's going to bounce back this year? Do you think they're going to get tripped up a little bit? They had mass exodus of coaches. Let me start with you, Darnell. Do you think that Bama is, if you have Bama in the field, are you going to take the field or are you going to take Bama?
In the field? Because if you look at Clemson returning all their skill players. Like, we know they lost the story defensive line with Christian Wilkins, Cleveland Farrell, Dexter Lawrence. I know they lost them to the NFL, but you look at that offense, you have Trevor Lawrence, looks like the second coming of Peyton Manning. And you also have, and all his weapons are coming back. You have Barry Rogers, T. Higgins, Justin Ross, you have Travis Etienne. They're all coming back. So it's going to get ugly for college football this year. I see Clemson beating every team by two or three touchdowns at least. So, I believe Alabama will run the table as far as the SEC goes. They might end up with like one loss or so, just because just the way the intensity of SEC football. But they're gonna get to the same spot, and then when they play Clemson, I'm gonna have to go with Clemson again. But it doesn't mean that Alabama's not a good team. But I just got Clemson just to notch ahead. But they will bounce back in the football game. It's just not a good question.
All right. What do you think, Hammer, about Bama?
They're going to bounce back, but the bottom line is that Tua doesn't perform in big games, except for his first one. And so they got tape on him now. And also, Tua makes bad decisions and he takes too many hits. So I think that they'll get through SEC, but yeah, Clemson is stacked with Lawrence and the running back and all the players coming back. I just think Clemson has an easier role in the ACC, and so yeah, I think Clemson's going to win it all again this year, and Tua's got to show that he can play the big-time competition. He was exposed last year. When they brought him off the bench, and I was in Cali seeing who's this guy, I heard about him. And he just tore up Georgia. I was like, okay, wow. But, you know, people see that tape now, and people are not afraid of Tua. And Tua just, he's injury prone. And also, you know, they're talking about getting a commitment back to the running game. And, you know, again, they need to do that. But Tua's got to, play up to his draft grade. I mean, McShay put him as number one. I think that's a suspect. I think Herbert's number one. So, Tua's a smaller guy, takes too many hits, runs too much, and has got to play better with football. Until I see him play against great competition, I think that Clemson's going to win. So.
All right. Now, I'm gonna get a couple of my friends from Hawaii going to be sending me some hate mail in a minute, but hey, this is how we do it. Real, we keep it real, y'all. I'm gonna take the hits right now. Speaking of Dabo, is Dabo being petty by not getting Kelly Bryant a championship ring? I'm gonna go to Hammer on this one. What do you think, Hammer? Should Dabo get a boy?
No, he's not being petty. Kelly left the team. God bless him in Missouri. I hope he can ball out and become a pro. But You leave the team, you don't get a ring. I mean, this isn't like baseball. You get shares or anything like that. Well, you gonna give him half a ring or, you know, a quarter of a ring? Come on. So, no. He again, it's unfortunate that, you know, Trevor Lawrence is a beast. He's gonna be the first pick in the 2021 draft, no question, hands down. So he lost the competition. He left. You're no longer a Tiger. You're a Missouri Tiger now. You're not a Clemson Tiger. So. That's how it is. So, no, Dabo is telling – it sets a bad precedent for people who are actually on the team that you can leave the team even though you contributed. No one's saying he didn't contribute. But when push came to shove, where was Kelly? In Columbia. He wasn't in Clemson. He wasn't in Greenville, South Carolina. Enough said.
Any play came out – this is how he came out. Took a bite out of cry. No. All right, come on, man. Let me see what the youngin' perspective is. Darnell, you coach. What's going on?
Man, he don't deserve a ring. I don't know why he wants a ring. I mean, you left the team voluntarily. So you left the program, and you decided not to be a part of it. So I don't see why he should get a ring.
Yeah. And you know, when there's that championship game, he was hoping Alabama beat him. You know, he wasn't gonna, he never gonna come out and say it. And so, yeah, if you don't stay to the end and be there, you know, you can't get a ring. You know, you can't. You know, Jalen Hurst, if they would have won, he gets a ring, right? They gonna give him a ring because he was there.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know what the whole discussion was about when people. I was like, why are y'all talking about this cat getting a ring? Now, Dabo could have been a little bit different about how he said it, but, you know, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. College football lining up, guys. Early matchups. Let's talk about early matchups we're excited about. Let me go. I've been letting y'all go. Let me go. The matchup I'm looking at, this is going to feel like the 1990s back, and this is why I think Clemson better be careful. I had a chance to hear Manny Diaz talk. I love Manny Diaz. And I like this matchup, Florida against Miami, early on. Because, really, for Miami. And it's going to be interesting because Dan Mullins was coaching at Mississippi State. Manny Diaz was his defensive coordinator, I believe, there. But Manny Diaz, you know, who committed to Temple, Rick retires. As he's interviewing an offensive coordinator in Miami, he finds out by noon, next thing you know, he's getting tapped for the Miami job like whirlwind, but he's there in Miami. This is the coach for the Hurricanes. And y'all know that if you can organize and get that talent to play, they dangerous. And I think their biggest issue is above the neck. I don't think it's talent. I think it's about them belief. And Manny Diaz, I think this guy is – I think he's the next Saban-like person. You heard it here.
I totally disagree with you, man. I mean, Manny Diaz was on the defense last year. They were raggedy. I mean, the Badgers tore him up. So all of a sudden, Manny Diaz became his genius? Come on, man.
Okay.
Come on, man.
Some people are better than the head coach piece. Manny was a great defensive coordinator. He's a great. They had a whole bunch of other problems that they found.
Man, Badgers tore them up, man. Badgers ran them like, I mean, they made Jack Cohen look like Drew Brees. Come on, man.
I'm telling you right now. I said it right now. Mark the tape. Hammer.
Yeah, eat the tape. He'd be eating the tape.
Overrated, man.
I mean, this is Mark Richt's dude, other defense. I was stunned by that hiring decision. Bring somebody from the outside with the Miami brand. Don't bring your
defensive
coordinator that had a bad year last year.
Rick struggled with Temple in that locker room.
And then come back.
Rick struggled with controlling that locker room.
But Dan Mullen's going to beat them like they stole something.
Dan Mullen's the best coach in college.
You can mark that right here. Put that on the tape. Beat them like they stole something.
They're
clowning in Gainesville.
This is going to be in Orlando.
He looks the part.
This is my
game. Who you got
early on? Now you don't make me jump on Wisconsin, but get their act together. I got Miami.
I agree. If they play for Miami,
Burks,
it'll be good.
I got Miami breaking through. Watch. So I'm on that one. And I'm gonna tell you right now. I'm gonna bring you back. I'm not gonna wait to the end of the season. I'm gonna bring you back probably about week 10.
I look forward to it. Look forward to eating crow, bro.
You're gonna be like D. Eating
turkey, eating crow.
You're gonna be like, I'm sorry. You're gonna be singing a tune like Anita Beck. You'd be like, I apologize. I better just get that keyed up.
I'm gonna give you the best I got. I'm giving you the best I got right now. That's what my Anita Beck is.
You on fire right now. So which game are you excited to see early on?
Oh, Bama LSU, I'd say definitely. That's a game I'm looking forward to. Ora Johns bringing back a lot of pieces, but again, I'm not impressing him as a head coach.
He's talking like he got like.
Well, he's not. I mean, look at him in Mississippi. They ran out of Mississippi. Wasn't that great at SC, man? Let's call it like it is. Oh, Coach O is a great recruiter. The fans, I mean, the fans love his gear. The players love him, but, yeah, man, Saban going to whoop him. And then with Sarkisian as OC, they're going to bring it, so. That's my early game, Bama.
Well, you said Alabama LSU?
Yeah.
They play in November. I thought we said early.
Okay, my bad.
They play in November. You got
frostbite. Okay, my bad. I thought my bad.
You got frostbite like AB? I got him rattled.
Hello?
He dropped. I think he dropped out. I don't
know. No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, D-Wells dropped out again.
Man, he dropped out like a Boogie Cousins ACL.
He'll come back soon.
Yep, but shoot, my early on game, it was going to be, well, I'm just going to go ahead and go with that Miami versus Florida game because I'm a little biased because I got a former teammate that played on Miami. So
okay.
I see all the little talk that's going on Twitter. So all the Florida Gators fans and all the Miami fans going at each other. And I can't wait for that game to happen, man. I might have to be in attendance in Orlando that night. But.
It's gonna be a show, brother. It's gonna be a show, but I still just think I just don't trust Manny Diaz, man. I like Mullen. I like the way he brought it from Starkville and his year in Gainesville, and so I just I could be proven wrong. It's gonna be a great iconic battle as far as the brands go with the Gator brand and the U brand, but Manny Diaz can't hold a candle to Mullen as far as coaching goes. And you know, talent's great, but coaching will transcend talent.
My trepidation with Miami is this quarterback situation. I heard the freshman is really good, but the way the coach is talking about it seems like he's leaving the door open for somebody else to take a spot later on in the year.
Probably Martell. I mean, Perry's not going to play. He's terrible, but his kid's raw. But that. Oh, go ahead, bro.
No, you're going. I was laughing.
Yeah. The kid's raw. That beat out. I think Jack something. But I think the bottom line is that Martell is there. He's not. He's not going to leave again. He's not going to transfer again. But you know, Martell was a high recruit, man. So, but he's not bringing it. And also, it could be size, too. I mean, he's 5'11". The game seems to not come to him. And he's got a lot of swagger. Maybe he's been humbled. But I don't see it right now, bro. So.
Definitely. Man, this is hey, Martell can't leave the game. He committed to, I think he committed to like Texas A&M or something like that. He committed went to Ohio State.
Yep.
They got a transfer, so he saw him, and he was on Twitter talking about don't swing and miss.
Yeah, and they swing and miss. You know, for right now, because he might come back and win it, but I just don't see it. You know, I think that
he ended up being the person that swung and missed. He went to Miami and got beat up by a freshman.
Yeah,
but I think it would be a mistake for him to leave because you look at players like Mitchell Trubisky and Kyler Murray. They and Dwayne Haskins, like they sat for a while and then they played for like a season or so, and they still were able to get drafted and have their stay in the NFL. So he might
they were humble though,
he
bro.
Might
this guy
sit down a little bit and work.
This guy not humble.
Yeah, he got to just. Yeah, he just got to sit down and get to work. Yeah, I agree with you.
Let's move on. We were talking about Rock Nation's new partnership with the NFL. Tell me about that. What do you think about that? So real controversial as far as, you know, Cap's not in the league, haven't been in the league for 2-3 years now. And, you know, Hove, you know, signs a deal with the devil, people will say. So tell me about what you think about the Rock Nation's new partnership with the NFL.
Well, I don't know what his role is with the NFL, to be honest. Like, he's partnering with the NFL. Like, what is he doing with the NFL?
He's doing programming, my understanding. He's doing programming, social justice programming, things like that. That's part of the deal as far as more programming, culturally fluent programming for the league to address the cultural divide that happened with Cap and Eric Reed and other people who were protesting against systematic oppression in this country and, you know, cause a lot of problems as far as with many viewers, white viewers of football and the predominantly black league that has players who, you know, like you and I, afraid to reach for our wallet if we've been pulled over by the police. So that's what they're talking about. So, you know, people think that Hove sold out and, you know, Eric Reed called him out on Twitter or Instagram. And so, you know, Hove broke it down and said basically that, hey, you have to turn protest to action. I respect that. So,
all right.
And you can't just protest. Protest has to turn into action. Protest is a pretext for action, but just protesting and protesting and protesting with no result makes no sense. So I agree with Hov on that.
Yeah, I agree with JV on this one because this is an issue that seems to be very close to his heart. I've seen in, like, especially later on in the 444 album and even his freestyles and his live shows, he has brought stuff like this to the forefront. So I agree with his judgment on this because like you said, we can protest and protest and protest, but at some point, we got to put things into action. And Colin Kaepernick, a lot of people don't talk about it, but he is the guy that he does take action. Like, he has the Know Your Rights camp and stuff like that. So, but I'm happy to see Jay-Z working with the NFL. And hopefully something good can come out of it. So I'm with Jay-Z on this one. I don't think he sold out.
Yeah, I agree. Good transition to we talking about Jay-Z and Hard Knock Life and Hard Knocks. So tell me if you looked at Hard Knocks. What's your early reaction to the Hard Knocks and the Raiders being there? AB and his feet, his helmet. Now he's not paying chefs Gruden. So. Tell me about what do you think about Hard Knocks so far?
I saw the first episode. I didn't see the second one yet, but from what I see, I like it. I like what I see so far. And who would have thought that Vontaze Perfect would be somewhat of like a leader on the field? Like I saw a video of him mic'd up when he was telling everybody where to go. And he was kind of being that big brother, big leader. Role going, and I saw the part with the guy from Last Chance U. Yeah, it's just sad to see that, but overall, Hard Knocks, I think, they picked the perfect team to be on Hard Knocks. With John Gruden, Antonio Brown, Vontaze Burfict. You got a good rising star in the show with the rookie out of Mississippi State. I think his name's Abrams.
Yeah.
He's really good on the show. But as far as Antonio Brown is going, and with this helmet thing, I don't know how much more I can defend of him, because with the whole Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger situation, I was on AB's side, because you've seen through multiple former teammates on the Steelers, they all say Ben Roethlisberger, his leadership is questionable, you know what I'm saying? And he went on the radio show to say AB should have ran a better route, but it got batted down by defensive linemen. You know, things like that made me think, okay, maybe Antonio Brown is just misunderstood, but this stuff, man, I can't defend him too much longer. But
he's a full blown meltdown. I mean, he was a humble guy, a 6th-round pick, got Central Michigan. Ran, kicks, punts back his first special teams his first year, then turned into one of the best receivers in football, and now he's acting like a fool. It's Stephen A. said, and it's embarrassing from cryotherapy. You know, you cover your feet up. and with the helmet, you know, helmets change. It's something you have to deal with in NFL. And so Gruden, I mean, he looks, I know, like, you know, again, he went for a 3rd and 5 for a reason with that type of talent, because he's just a headache. And Gruden, like I said, is made for TV. Gruden's a perfect guy. Vontaze Burfict, yeah, showing his leadership. You got a lot of cats, you know, Mike Glennon showing how ragged he is. But the bottom line is that, yeah, I think that it's great TV, but the Raiders are going to be, you know, joke this year. And also, you know, David Carr is really angry right now because, you know, his career is on the line. And you got AB. You got Terrell Williams is number 2. I think that the Raiders will be drafting a quarterback next draft, and maybe Tua, so, you know. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say this. I'm going to jump on in. Sorry, I'm back. But Hammer, you said so much blasphemy, you broke my computer, man. So I'm back in business. My computer couldn't hold up to that stuff you were saying before. My computer went overload. But I hear y'all talking about Hard Knocks. AB showing his colors. Let's tell it like it is. And, you know, it's when you're in search of something and you don't really know who you are. AB's searching for his identity. He is lost focus. He is trying to capture what he thinks Odell Beckham has. He is trying to push beyond the whole brand piece. When all he has to do is play. He's putting up historic numbers. That if AB was just playing, he's already put numbers that puts him in the top 2 or 3 receivers of all time when you look at his numbers in his first set of seasons. And he's going to get the T.O. treatment, where he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's going to end up waiting because of these antics. For nothing. You got your money. Why are we still talking about him and he's got his money?
$30 million guaranteed, man. It's a disgrace, man.
You know, and so you know, meanwhile on the East Coast, Mike Tomlin and the crew are proceeding for getting ready for the season. You know, and now Gruden's gonna have to deal with it. And you're not gonna have any choir boys if you're gonna win. You're gonna have some. You got to get the target, but you're not always not going to have choir boys, but man, don't make it self-inflicted. And you're right, Burfict looks like the choir boy in it. He's the one that's trying to get his act together, and everybody else is crazy around him. This is almost like this is back to them old days of the Raiders. Maybe they try to go back to them old days of the Raiders, but it is made for TV. You're right, this is the best Hard Knocks they could have put together. I'm glued to it. It's like I'm waiting for the wheels to come up. I'm waiting for Chucky to lose his mind, which is coming. He gives you a little glimpse he hasn't all the way erupted, but I got a sense that's coming, where he's just going to lose his mind, and I can't wait for that one. I did want to chime in on the Jay-Z thing real quick. I know you guys went ahead on that one. Thank y'all for keeping the ball moving. This is Real Sports Guys, One Mike. You got my man Hammer, Darnell. They keeping it moving, man, and I've been in and out on it. But I love what you were saying, Hammer. And one of the things I think that people forget, you know, all I heard was people have to say is social justice. And the thing that just drives me crazy is social justice early on also included economic justice.
Preach.
And when you talk, the lens that Jay-Z works through is the economic justice lens. And when I was doing a group text with some people on Fantasy that I'm with, we're having discussions, and you know the whole line. Look at the entire line where he said, you know, he did it for what they did to the Coke Rush, tells you where his mind is going around how he set his. So if you understand that, you understand why he's making these deals and the leverage in terms of moving the action. And if we are not developing plans around economic justice, then we are missing the boat. Even when you look at the issues around law enforcement, most of the police and fire commissions, most of the people who sit on those commissions are business people. You're talking about influencing. Most of those are business people. Hampton will tell you, Hampton's been involved in public service for a long time. Business people have influence in so many parts of these communities. But people of color don't populate those areas. They're not part of those conversations. They're not in those rooms. And so when I hear people pushing back on all this stuff, and what I said to the folks online is, okay, Reed, if you're going to come out like this, y'all can just not play the first and second week. 70% of y'all are black. Don't take the check if we're about social justice.
Mm-hmm.
All y'all can walk out.
Preach.
And they would
preach.
Be done. They can't replace you. If it's about social justice, miss some two game checks. Miss three game checks for your boy Cap. Nobody's doing that. So don't start getting on Jay when Jay is trying to do something that can disrupt. You got to work on the inside out. You have a multi pronged approach, and we make this stuff too simplistic. And people talk about social justice without economic justice. You're missing the other half of the equation. Even Dr. King understood that. If you look at the levers they use. The bus strike was about economic stuff. You put the pressure on them. So you look, you understand that element of it, and folks have just missed all those lessons. And so I'm slapping the stuff off the glass like Matumbo. We'll move on to our next one. Now that I'm catching up with y'all got the show popping on me. I'm sorry I had to go. I went into purgatory, and it was out there. Camera said something before I knew it, my computer just broke down. You must have dropped the mic on me or something. You just hit me with the overhand. I probably got hit by the Wilder punch, and my computer just went straight out the gate on it. I want to hit you guys up. Y'all, I don't know if y'all had a chance to even cover this, but I think y'all might have been working towards it.
No, that's luck, yeah.
About luck. We call it bad luck. Now,
no, not bad luck. Not bad luck, no. That's not bad. Break it down, no. Ryan Grigson put my man behind. Everyone knows I'm a Stanford alum. Put my man behind a bad offensive line. He got hurt. And so there's nothing going on with Andrew Luck but the fact that he's been injured, that he was comeback player of the year last year. They're being cautious, unlike Ryan Grigson, and they're going to preserve him. Maybe Brissett has to play game one, game two. But I think that Luck will come back, you know, play 14 or so and be good. He's not a bust. I mean, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and by an excellent offensive line, and he's not snake bitten like some people say. Again, he sacrificed his body early in his career because of lack of talent around him. You turn that team around, but now Andrew Luck's got more talent around him, and he's got to act accordingly. And so, you know, he got hurt. So the football, you're gonna get hurt. So, plain and simple.
But you got to say, I mean, Andrew Luck had a lack of talent, but he also made, in the early part of his career, he's making a lot of poor decisions, throwing a lot of interceptions. Like some, a lot of plays.
If you're behind that line, you'd be making poor decisions too, because they're about
to
blast.
We don't give everybody else that excuse.
If that line was raggedy,
we ain't giving James Winston.
That line was raggedy. He was running for his life. He ain't Lamar Jackson.
Andrew Luck the raggedy.
He ain't Lamar Jackson. He's not Randall Cunningham. He's Andrew Luck. So
we give Andrew Luck the raggedy line excuse, but we don't give everybody else that. We give that. We reserve that for Andrew Luck. Like, nobody else gets to rag you on.
No, I'm giving the reason why he made some poor decisions and had some picks. Yeah,
some of that was just bad throws. Like, he was just making
again,
some bad
brother,
throws.
If you behind, if you worried about it, it's like the David Carr syndrome. When David Carr came to the league, he was doomed for the start because he was just imagining himself on his back every play because he got sacked, what, 80 times or something. So Andrew Luck was getting sacked massively. You know, again, Luck is one of the best quarterbacks in football, no question, when he's healthy. But right now, he's not healthy. He's got this high ankle sprain or whatever it is. They said calf. I mean, now I'm worried because they've gone from calf to high ankle sprain. You know, what is it? And the NFL needs to break it down because this isn't hockey. We're supposed to know what the injury is. It's not supposed to be lower leg or upper body like hockey. And so, yeah, I think that Luck, again, he'll be back, and they're being cautious. And Chris Ballard's a much better steward of his players than Ryan Grigson. That's why Ryan Grigson's at home watching the game with you and I. So,
but Luck hurt himself. He hurt his shoulder snowboard. Like, you know, if that would have been like somebody else, they'd have been like, okay, he's not being responsible. He hurt his shoulder snowboard. I mean, I think right. Andrew Luck is great.
Can't be both ways. If they play with pain, he shouldn't have played with pain. They say play with pain. You look at Jay Cutler. He got dogged out on national TV. Didn't play with pain. So, no, you can't have it both ways, man. They say play with pain. Then he's out for a year and a half. So, again, like I said, not to be repetitive, Chris Ballard knows his stuff. Shut him down. You got Jacoby Brissett who can ball. Andrew Luck, he's a good player. He's going to be a starter on an NFL team next year probably. When his rookie contract runs out, because the guy can ball. And so, you know, again, Luck's not snake bitten. Luck is hurt right now. So,
I think part of the reason why he's been hurt is because
raggedy offensive line to start off with, yeah.
That sounds like some sample cooking right there, but I'll give you that one. What do you think, Darnell? Darnell went to the Witness Protection Program.
Okay.
I was on mute. I don't think he's a bust. I think he's just an injury prone quarterback. And that'll happen to you when you play behind a bad offensive line like he did in the first half of his career. But right now, he has a great offensive line with Quentin Nelson and the guy they put around him. So I would look forward to him being more healthy. I think when he comes back, he's not going to have the problems that he used to have. But I think what you said about the injury situation, it does concern me because you said they don't know if it's a high ankle sprain or a calf.
Well, they're playing us for fools. They know what it is. They're just not going to tell us. I mean, this is the NFL, which is not for long. So if you mess up certain stuff, so they know what it is. But they've gone from the calf to it's kind of like KD. They went from. You know, it was the calf, and then it was probably Achilles. So they're going to tell you what it is. It's probably a high ankle sprain issue because that takes longer to heal than a calf. So
because you said a high ankle sprain in a calf. I was thinking Achilles because they all in that same region. I was like, I hope it's
it could be Achilles. It could be Achilles strain. I mean, eventually the NFL is going to have to know what it is or they're going to get fined massively, but I mean, it's not hockey, like I said again, where they do lower leg. It's ridiculous. Lower leg and upper body. I mean, that's why nobody watches hockey. It's a joke.
All right, we're going to move on. Jerry. You know, Jerry's trying to discipline. He's on that Atkins diet. He's trying to be disciplined with that money. He's trying to keep that beef in the right place. He's trying to resist paying that money out to his three that – he's looking at to negotiate their salary. You know, they're all in different positions. Darnell, as you've been looking at the Cowboys situation, what would you do if you were Jerry Jones?
If I was Jerry Jones, I would pay Ezekiel Elliott. If Ezekiel Elliott is the best player on their team, I know he's holding out, and quite frankly, the Cowboys being a team that in the past has been a team that they usually play their stars. So him holding out is kind of like a, I wouldn't say a slap in the face, but more like a, yeah, so it's a little like a head scratcher to me. But I understand that he needs to get his money, because if all three of those get the, if all three of him, Amari, and Dak, if they all get paid what they want to get paid, then one of those guys is going to end up being left out just because the way the salary cap is. But my first order of business would be signing Zeke, and then Dak, and then Amari later on. But the biggest problem with that is Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott said he wants $40 million a year, and I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can pay that $40 million for
he denies
Dak.
That.
So
but
I gotta get him in the room and talk to him, because if it's gonna be like that, we might have to be looking somewhere else. But my first order of business is to get Zeke.
All right, Hammer, where would you go?
I'd let Zach play out his contract, let him go. I'm not impressed with Zach. He didn't ball until Amari Cooper came to the club. That shows me that he's not as great of a quarterback as he is. He's a good quarterback. He's not worth $30 million. He's not worth Carson Wentz money. Carson Wentz is, again, injury-prone, but a transcendent NFL player that can do almost anything on the football field. Dak is a solid player, maybe $20 million a year. So if he's talking 30, forget about it. He's 20 at best, maybe $50 million guaranteed. I'm going to shock you with the second one with Zeke. I'm going to throw you something that I would trade Zeke right now. And you know who I trade him for? Melvin Gordon. I'd sign Melvin Gordon to a deal. I would not give Zeke Elliott has done ridiculous stuff since he's been in the NFL, from the problems he had at Ohio State to what he groped that woman in the parade out in, what was it, I think New Orleans, whatever it was, to incident where he got in a fight in Las Vegas. You don't invest money that's going to be flushed down the toilet. And again, Zeke's a great player, but there's no way I would give him the money. That's foolhardy. Jerry Jones not become a billionaire by making poor decisions and giving away his money. You know, and then you got somebody like Zeke, who's advising his brother. They got you on. You're not Le'Veon Bell, where you can be a free agent after this. They got you for two more years. They got you for your rookie deal, and they got you for a franchise and another franchise. Really got you for 3 years. And so whoever's talking to Zeke is probably himself, because he's been like a damn fool since he's been in the league. And so, you know, Melvin Gordon would be great in that offense. He's a versatile player, and he deserves his money. And San Diego and LA's not gonna pay it. They like Austin Eckler. They like Justin Jackson. They're gonna move on. So trade Zeke to LA and let him clown LA. But and then the final thing with Amari, franchise Amari, and let him play out his contract too. And so you gotta think Dak takes less money. Melvin Gordon, decent contract that I can pay. And then Amari franchise, salary cap problem saved. You have to pay Jalen Smith. You have to pay Byron Jones. There are a lot of other people you got to pay, but Zeke is not where you do not want to gobble up your cap with Zeke. No. Not for the poor decisions he's made. I mean, he had to show up in Roger Goodell's office again. He's been in Roger Goodell's office too damn many times.
And I would say, and people start arguing with, I don't think Wentz is worth Wentz money. And I think, again, people make decisions about Wentz in ways that I look at it and I'm saying, look, you didn't finish. Availability. Your backup took it to a Super Bowl. I still need to see more. You yourself admitted you got problems leader in the locker room and issues with being leadership. People didn't put players are pushing back on you. A lot of stuff you got to do. So I would give Wentz money, but they jumped out front. They pulled a Draymond Green on him. They got in. They tried to beat the gold rush for quarterbacks, and that's how he got paid. So if I was Philly, I would have given the money, but they had to So I don't think Wentz should have got Wentz money, but I love your plan, Hammer, in the sense that I agree with you, man. I can't. Zeke is the guy. I think Zeke can take him to the Super Bowl, but I can't trust you because I don't know what you're doing in the club.
Preach. Can't trust it.
If we get the Super Bowl week, you might be the cat again. That we end up, with your boy Eugene. We end up, Super Bowl weekend. You out of the club, something not happen.
Why is he in Cabo St. Lucas right now? That's not a place to be. He's in Cabo. He ought to be in Columbus. I mean, with Bobby Carpenter or something. He's in Cabo? Now I read that today that he's down to 220, but he's not in football shape. I mean, he might be, in human shape, but you're talking about football that you played. I can't imagine that level. I've just heard that level is just crazy how they come. Yeah. I mean, maybe every given Sunday showed us how it looks like, but seeing games, but man, no. I mean, please, Zeke, trade him to L.A. L.A. would take him, and he'd play there. So, because they would look at him, too, and be like, hey, we got you for three more years, bro. What you going to do? Nothing.
Melvin Gordon's an injury pro player, too.
At least he's trustworthy, man. He's a good young man. I mean, I'm going to be – obviously, people think I'm biased. He's a Badger, but he's a good young man.
Definitely.
I would invest in Melvin Gordon, even though he only played 12 games last year. I would not invest in somebody who's going to get in a fight in the club. Who's even in the club? Why is he in the club? You can buy you a club. You can buy you a club at home. You can bring you're making millions of dollars. I hope he's not buying Tigers like Mike Tyson or something like that, or messed up his
money.
Everybody
in the league in the club. Tom Brady probably in the club.
Nah, Tom Brady, he got $40 million house. Tom Brady got a club in his house, please. That's, he got sense. You need, like I said, why are these guys out here with these? You can't be out, if you worth millions, you can't be out with people who worth dollars. It's that simple. I mean, it might sound elitist or whatever, but you can't be out with people who have more to lose than you do. And Zeke has put himself in situations where these people are worth dollars. He's worth millions of dollars, and he's compromised his money and his freedom. Forget his money, the freedom. He's looking at a criminal case. Fighting security guards. I mean, he messed around and get shot. No, you can't invest in that, man. Can't invest in that. He thinks he's still in Columbus. He's a man on BMOC. Man, you're in the NFL, bro. Not for long. If I were GM, like I said, if I were Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones, he'd be shipped out of there. I'd be like, deuces.
And this is what I'm going to say, y'all. We have some other times, but we're going to end on that one. Because Hammer has laid it out. You left nothing else on the table, brother. This is why I'm glad you were able to come on and fill in for Hank. You know, I'm going to have to get you back on here again next week again. We're going to get you another. I'm going to just do one with you next week because you are on fire. We got more to talk about with you. But we want you to drop the mic for the show and send us out and drop the mic. And we want to thank you again for being with us tonight. One mic here on Real Sports Guys platform. Go to realsportsguys.com. Check all of our stuff out. Hit the podcast tab. Check our latest stuff out, including this one. But we're going to let my boy Hammer take a minute here to drop the mic and say some final words.
Yeah, thank you very much, D-Wills. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to come here and speak on sports and show what I would call black male positivity. There have been too many negative viewpoints of black males in the media, sports, and all. It's great to engage with two great brothers who are thoughtful, who are insightful, who are analytical, who understand the nuances of sports. And that's what we need to do, approach life, brothers and sisters, and everyone out here. Approach life with a thought-provoking attitude where you're analyzing and you're realizing what you want to do in life. And you want to know your passion. I mean, D. Will started this show because he wanted to follow his passion in sports. And he wanted to surround himself with people who share that passion. And so my word to you is that don't have people around you who don't share your passion, who don't have a direction in their lives, who aren't thinking about, who are thinking about the next day instead of the next 10 years. That's all I have to say. God bless. This is Hammer on RSG, signing off. Peace.
This thing right here,
yeah,
it's for my peoples in the streets.
Yes, yes, today, yes, yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic,